All right. Hello there. This is Wiley Walker, and this is yet another episode of Escaping Addictions, which this is a podcast where I have done a lot of different subjects and from just all kind of things. I try to keep it basically revolved around addiction and, you know, ways to overcome addiction, but I've done a lot of different topics. So what I wanted to do right now, I wanted to really talk about, you know, some ways over a few podcasts, ways that are actual practical ways of how addiction is overcome, at least the way that it was overcome by me and a lot of people. You know, and I'm going to use, you know, the 12-step methods, talk about the 12-step methods in a way, but in my own personal experience and how it was related to me. So I just thought at the beginning, okay, so when a person is caught up in the thralls of an addiction, and they seem to just be caught in this continual destructive cycle of relapse where they stop for a while, and then the next thing you know, they're right back doing it again. So that's what we call powerlessness, where the person seems to have no power when it comes to the decision making of whether to drink or not, or to use that drug. It seems like at this point, the person is totally addicted to that drug and that drink, or that drink, and they cannot stop. So when you use enough of a substance, when you drink enough alcohol over a period of time, eventually you become addicted, and you become addicted bodily, you become addicted mentally, and you become addicted spiritually, and you get damaged. And you get damaged in those areas too. So one of the hardest things, especially for a man to do, is to admit that he's been defeated. And that is what the addiction does. I mean, it totally destroys us, defeats us, long before we really are able to see that and to admit it. And most importantly, before we are able to ask for help. So in my case, you know, the addiction starts off fun. You know, you're drinking and you're partying, and you're doing it too much, and everybody around you can see it way before you do. You're doing it too much, and people start, you know, saying, "Hey, you need to slow down. You're drinking too much. You know this and this," and you kind of, at this point, it's kind of more of these the advice that people are giving you is like, it's just an aggravation. You know, it's like, well, hey, I'm grown, you know, I'm not hurting anybody, or whatever it is that a person says to rationalize and defend continued use of the substance. So eventually, if a person goes on long enough, eventually it gets to the point whereas, like for me, you start things, the addiction starts to affect your life in negative ways. It starts to affect your relationships. It starts to affect your ability to keep a job. I mean, it affects your relationship with God, with yourself. Because it all becomes, eventually it all becomes about the substance. The substance really becomes your God. The drink, the alcohol becomes your God. The drug becomes your God. And it's something that you wake up thinking about, you go to bed thinking about, you plan for it. Everything revolves around the addiction. So for me, for a long time, I was able to maintain, you know, a semblance of a normal life, even though that life was constantly, my life was constantly revolving around using and partying. And I started to associate more and more with people who were doing that too, because that's the most normal thing for an addict to do, is to associate with other people that are using. So eventually, when the hard drugs came into play, eventually, basically, the gig was up. Okay, and I wound up almost instantly on the streets. I stopped working. I was in Griffin, Georgia, right on the outskirts of Atlanta. I was with my dad down there with my dad, and you know, all the people that he worked with. But I stopped going to work, and basically all I did was run the streets and get high. So at this point, the addiction was totally out of control. It had totally destroyed my life, but I really didn't even see it that way at that point. Because to me, doing the drugs was a greater benefit to me than to having the life I had, than to having a place to live, than having food to eat, than being safe. I risked my life to acquire my addiction. So as far as food, I don't know how long it was that I went basically without eating hardly anything or drinking water or whatever. And at one point, I knew I got to the point where I was so hungry that I did something I usually don't do, and I started asking people for help. Not really help to just give me some food or give me something to eat, but what could I do? And people were like, well, why don't you go to the food stamp office? They'll give you stamps, you know, to get, so you can get food. So I went to the food stamp office, and when I got there, so they finally called me in the office, and it was this lady. And I was sitting in this office with this lady, and while she was asking me questions and taking information, all of a sudden, my stomach just went to growling. I mean, loud. It was ridiculous. It was like, it was so loud that the lady was just horrified by it almost. She just immediately wrote me some emergency paperwork that I can go to the store and get some food, because I was, you know, I hadn't eaten anything. I might have snacked on some stuff here and there, but I wasn't eating. I wasn't taking care. This is what powerlessness was to me, that the only thing I cared about was the drugs. Well, eventually you have to. I mean, you have to eat sooner or later. I mean, I don't care what. I don't care how much drugs you do eventually, but you're gonna have to need to eat. But you know, it is amazing how, you know, long you can go without sleep, without eating and stuff, as long as you have drugs. So eventually, I mean, you know, you get into things. I got into stealing, shoplifting, and eventually I got caught and went to jail. So looking back on it now, I could say that God intervened, and that probably was the best thing for me. Because now I was somewhere, I was eating 3 times a day. And I was pretty much safe, you know, because I was on a road to probably the grave. I mean, I'm out here in these neighborhoods getting into it somewhat with these drug dealers and stuff like that, and not really thinking back then that, man, these people will kill you. So, I went to jail, and eventually my mom bailed me out at Christmas. I went to jail like in October, I think. And so another thing, so I had got the food stamps. So I went to jail. Well, I got the food stamps, or I didn't get the food stamps. I don't remember if I got the food stamps. I got the little emergency paperwork and went and got a bunch of food from the store. She gave me like $40. I can go get $40 worth. I went and got $40 worth of food, basically ate till I was full, and then sold the rest of it. So I went to jail, and they let us out for Thanksgiving. They let us out for like 2 or 3 days. And this is how powerlessness is. So when I got out of jail, so when they let us out the day before Thanksgiving, I think. And when I got out of jail, the first thing I thought was those food stamps. I said, I'm going to get those food stamps and maybe sell them for some drugs. So I went, and they were there. And I tried, but I went back to the same neighborhood where I was getting into it and almost got jumped by the whole neighborhood. I had to run out of there. And so after that, I just went back to jail. I mean, it was cold out. I mean, it was nothing for me to do. So after my mom bailed me out in Christmas, I went to Jackson to live with my mom, and you know, I was like to the point that I'm done with drugs. The drugs took me to being on the streets and getting into dangerous situations and jail. I'm starving myself. You know, I said, this is stupid. But of course, eventually it came up again. Eventually, one day, just for no reason, or because somebody offered me some weed or whatever it was, boom, I went right back to it. And one day, my pastor and my mom went to, I guess I was selling weed or something at the time or something to it. I had left. When I came back, there was my mom and my pastor. And I didn't think anything about it, really. So when I go into my room, I knew something was up because I said, I told my pastor, you know, I said, hey, Brother Dexter, and he really didn't say anything. So I went into my room, and there it is. All this weed is all over the dresser. So they started talking about me going to treatment. I went to this place called the Harbor House, and that's where I first started hearing about powerlessness. But I didn't want to accept that. I didn't, you know, and basically that's one of the words they use. And one thing that you have to do, you have to have acceptance of your problem. Acceptance is the key to all of my problems. But it's deeper than just accepting the fact that you're an addict. But I wasn't ready to accept that. I still thought some kind of way I had power that I wasn't smoking because I was powerless. I was smoking because I like to smoke. That's what I thought. Even though the evidence would have said otherwise. So with the treatment, I left early. I left before I finished. And it just went on and on and on from there. I mean, treatment center after treatment center on the streets. I didn't really go to jail again. I went to jail one more time because I didn't go to court. I was constantly running into the police. More violent situations than the one with the guys chasing me. I mean, I done been in situations where somebody was trying to kill me. You know, they had guns pulled on me, been robbed, and all this kind of stuff. Just all kind of crazy insanity. And, you know, it just, it really just went on from there. I mean, it went on probably for another 15 years. This is insane how long this cycle can go on. And I got to the point to where it's one day, it was like, God, let me have a moment of clarity where I just knew I needed some help. I knew I could not do this by my, I knew I could not stop. And it was like Halloween and I was drunk out of my mind. I would stop going to work. I was hallucinating. I don't know what was going on all the way during those last days, but I'm sitting there thinking it's about to happen again. I was living in somebody's house up in, they had a apartment in their house, and I was renting the apartment. I had a job. You know, I had my car, and I had just got off of probation off of a DUI. And well, it was about a year after that. It was a while after that. It might have been a year. But I was off of the probation. When I got off of the probation, I just went all the way back, full force, back into drinking. So I'm up here. I stopped going to work. I was just drinking. I mean, I didn't want to do anything with drink. And I'm sitting here. And I'm so drunk. I'm so out of my mind. I'm thinking that now, you know, I'm about to lose my job. I'm going to get put out of this house. I'm going to be honest, you know, all this bad stuff is going to happen. I don't know what to do. And all of a sudden, this commercial comes on TV about addiction. And is asking, are you having problems with alcohol? Has it affected your family, your job? You know, I'm thinking all, yes. And they give a number. I call the number. I called the number, and it's to some place out in Florida. I was in Nashville at the time. And this treatment center was out in Florida. So there I go. I sign up. I had insurance. They was going to send me a plane ticket. I was going to be going to Florida. I called, and I started calling my friends, letting them know. I called one of my friends, and I told him I was going to treatment. He said, and I told him I was going to Florida. He said, why are you going to Florida? I was like, I don't know. I mean, the commercial people, those people at the on the, that I called from the number on the commercial, that's where, the, you know, and so he was like, why don't you go to treatment here in Nashville? And he started naming off some places. I didn't want to go to any, you know, homeless treatment center. And I said I wasn't going to go. So he said, well, what about this other place? And he said, what about Cumberland Heights? And I didn't know anything about Cumberland Heights. And I said, I don't, you know. And he said, well, some of his friends had gone there. And so at that point, because I know this guy, and this guy is, you know, is a very well-to-do, wealthy person. So I knew if some of his friends went there, it had to have been some kind of, I said, so I was open to it. And I called and got it all set up. And they ran my insurance and said, yeah, you're good. They come in. Come in the next day. So the next day came and I was still drinking. I tried to call. I called the treatment center. I said, well, look, I need a little more time. I'll be there tomorrow. So when I called my friend back, he was like, no, you're going today. I'm like, damn, what? it's a good thing he did, because when I got there, I was like, my blood pressure was over 200. So anyway, I get there and to the treatment center, and I'm like, you know, I'm thinking, what is this going to do? I've been to treatment 20 times. I mean, what are they going to tell me? I don't know. But what happened, these people were coming telling their story. These people that were in AA, and they were coming telling their story. And they were talking about going to jail, losing their family, losing their job, relapse after relapse, all this crazy stuff. And it sounded just like my story. And I just heard so many of these stories, and they all kept saying that they had found the 12 steps. That was the answer for them. And from 15 years ago or whatever, how long it was, when I heard it back at the Harbor House, and I rejected it, and I said, that's not me. I'm not powerless. I'm Wiley. You know, ain't no drug. You know, and how crazy is that for me to think that? I mean, look, what the drugs had done and what it was constantly doing. And I still didn't believe that I was powerless. I felt like I was a victim of the circumstances that were happening around me, that, you know, I was minding my business doing drugs and people kept interfering. The police kept messing with, you know, or whatever. And so, the people were saying that AA was the answer they found. And they said to get a sponsor, get somebody to help you through the steps. And I was just ready to listen. You know, I didn't know what else to do. It was nothing. I mean, what else was there? I tried everything else. I tried church. I tried school. I tried whatever. I tried to just smoke weed. I tried to just drink. I tried to only smoke dope on, you know, whatever, once a week or or not spend all my money. I tried everything. And just it never worked. Excuse me. So I did. And so now, you know, I'm like 15 months sober and I have a whole different life. And I believe if I keep doing what I'm doing, that I don't ever have to go back to that life again. And I always remember how bad it was. And I always know one thing, that I'm powerless. That I don't have any power anymore when it comes to deciding or not, whether or not, if I'm going to take a drink. I don't have that power anymore. I can't not decide it. Eventually, I will find some trivial excuse to take a drink if I don't do the things that I do every day. I get up and pray. I read some literature about this disease of addiction. I try to go to a meeting every day. And I don't go every day, but I go as much as I can. I go several times a week. I talk to another alcoholic. I talk to my sponsor. And I thank God at the end of the day for keeping me sober today. So, if you're out there and you've been trying everything you know how to beat this addiction and you can't stop, then the key to winning this battle is to surrender. Stop fighting, because you ain't gonna beat it. It's only going to get worse. It's only going to get worse. It's never going to get better. It's only going to get worse. You're only going to acquire new consequences. You're only going to lose more friends. You're only going to lose more jobs. You're only going to disappoint yourself. And you're never going to be able to stay. You're not going to be able to stay in the will of God. You can't stay in the will of God when drugs or alcohol is your God. And so the key is to get help. Ask God for help. The key is to get help. And the key is to listen to somebody who has done what you're trying to do, and that is stay sober. Stop listening to your friends that's telling you, "Oh man, you all you gotta do is it's a mental thing. You know, you just gotta control it." For some people, that just ain't gonna never work. You know, so that's my talk about powerlessness. I mean, hopefully my story let you know just how powerless. And I was more powerless than that. I mean, it's just some things I'm not going to talk about on a podcast. But, you know, what I said is enough to let you know that, you know, it was bad enough from that. You know, so if you're out there and I'm not talking to somebody who doesn't want to quit. If you don't want to quit, then that's just that. I mean, if you don't want to quit, it's nothing nobody's going to be able to do. If you don't see this as a problem, if you're living in your car and, you know, you can't keep a job, you can't, you know, keep any money, and you stay high, but you think that's the life, then more power to you. And do, I mean, because I don't knock anybody for what they want to do. If you're a grown person and you want to live like that, because you want to live like that, but I just say that the only warning I would give is that life gets worse and worse until the point to where you wish you would have stopped years ago. You know, you wake up one day and you're like me, you're almost 50 years old and you're starting over from scratch. I mean, there's no way to be. So, you know, that's the thing. You know, if you need help, call AA, call somebody, call some family, call some people. Tell them you need help. Tell them that you can't stop. Tell them you want to stop. Pray to God to give you the strength to be able to do what you need to do to get the help. All right. So that's the message on powerlessness. The next one is going to be on insanity, or maybe acceptance. You know, acceptance is the key to my problems today. I have to accept a lot of stuff. You know, I got to accept a lot of stuff. And I have to deal with it because I made the consequences. I made my bed. And I have a good life today, really. You know, I really have a life far beyond what I thought I would have. So, you know, but next time I'll talk about probably step two, and that is, you know, trying to get back some sanity, because addiction leads us to insanity. And I'll explain what that is the next time. Well, I thank you for listening. This is Wiley Walker. Then this is Escaping Addictions. So we are going to work together, and we are going to, one day at a time, we are going to stay away from this lifestyle that is trying to destroy us and kill us, lock us up, and to hurt people and all that stuff. So thank you for listening, and I'll talk to you later. Bye.